You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Allocation Disorder. I am Sam Stasekel. Slightly different introduction to this week's episode. We are recording on Wednesday, the day after the senseless killing in Uvalde, Texas. Wanted to lead with, you know, obviously expressing my heartbreak over that tragedy. And also wanted to point folks in the direction of a fundraiser that the Austin FC supporters group Los Verdes ATX has begun via GoFundMe. They've already raised over $50,000 through that. I posted a link to it on my Twitter page. Obviously, you know, this is what's dominating not just the news cycle, but occupying a lot of headspace and mental space for a lot of people around the country and around the world, certainly on this show. So wanted to lead with something there. The supporters down in Austin doing a nice thing for the families of those affected who lost their children, and in a couple of cases, mothers and aunts and so on and so forth, their loved ones. They're working directly with Uvalde city officials to make sure all of that money goes directly to the families affected. So if you're interested and have the means, please go check that out. Like I said, that link is on my Twitter page for anyone who is so inclined. But moving past that, we wanted to put a show out for you guys. Obviously, this will come out on Friday, so a little bit past that terrible news. Hopefully, that fundraiser is still active by the time you're hearing this. If not, I'm sure there are other ways you can get involved as well. Different show for you this week, because I am joined not by my friend and colleague Paul Tenorio, but my friend and colleague Michele Giannone from 2DNA. Michele, how's it going, man?
Hi, Sam. I wish I could have said that I'm great, but I'm devastated by what happened yesterday.
Yeah.
It's been terrible, I think, 12, 14 hours since the news broke. And when you called me before what happened and told me about having the opportunity to be with you here in Allocation Disorder, and it's tied to my background and what my career has been directed until the last 2 years, and being a huge fan of you and Paul, and then making that transition to meet you guys in person and working together on the USMNT trips and having the honor of calling you my friends and the relationship that we've developed. I was so excited to be here. I am excited to be here. And this, for me, was going to be a day of celebration because it means a lot that you thought of me to be here.
Hey, no problem.
But
it can still be a day of celebration.
It will be a day of celebration. It broke me. I woke up this morning with sadness. As an immigrant in this country, I've been 11 years here in the US. Sandy Hook was 10 years ago. And yesterday, for the first time, I doubt about my future here in the US. And if I want to raise a family, I don't have kids yet. If I want my kids to be born here. And so it's been difficult the last 12 hours. And I can't imagine what those families are going through. And just hopefully things like what the guys at Austin fundraiser are doing, it could make small change in this darkness. I'm sorry. It's a little bit, you know.
No, don't apologize.
It's difficult to work today, but here we are, and we have like, this is a good you get the show moment if you're a Dale Batar fan. Awkward transition.
There we go. Awkward transition. So I want to get a little bit into Michele's background for those of you that might not be familiar with him. I'm sure many of you listening to this show have seen him on Twitter over the last, 9 months or so since the beginning of qualifying, and he's kind of boosted his follower count with some, frankly, some hot takes, Michele. I'll just be honest with you. But I wanted to get into a little bit of your background. You have been doing some sideline reporting for MLS games. You mentioned on the US trips, you and Dani Nora are there from, I mean, you're there longer than anybody else. Like literally, like you are there covering that team more days than any other reporter that covers that team, dating all the way back to the start of the Berhalter era when you were running around with Nico Kantor doing it. So you know this team super well. But tell us a little bit about your background. You're Venezuelan, you're Italian, you're just like Gio Savarese. So tell us a little bit about your path to this point and you know, let people get to know the man behind the flaming hot take Twitter account.
Yeah, my 5,000 follower Twitter account.
It's a good follow. For those of you that don't follow him, so check him out. But anyway, tell us about yourself, Miguel.
Yeah. Well, Sam just mentioned I've been working at the old Univision Deportes since 2014, and now to the N, what you guys know here in the U.S. and Mexico. I started covering the USMNT in January 2018 after Bruce Arnold left and Trinidad and Tobago happened. So I started covering that.
So you came at the best time, like really just an excellent moment.
Fantastic.
For
everybody was happy. Everybody was positive.
But the very start of the Berhalter era, though.
Well, I had 2018 was the Sarah.
I always black that year out.
Yeah, me too.
Amazingly. But yeah.
Yeah, me too. And that happened the other day. I was like doing you're talking about my hot takes on Twitter. I was giving when the U.S. sealed being in the World Cup. After the Panama win, well, sealed, basically
effectively,
sealed.
No?
Effectively sealed. Not mathematically, but effectively in Orlando, I was just tweeting about how fortunate I've been through going the whole Berhalter era. And I started tweeting, obviously, making it bad by mentioning that I started covering this team on January 2019.
Like, you even, forgot when you started.
Yeah, that's super nice to it. And yeah, I think it happened to all of us. We blocked out 2018 and the Sarakan year. So yeah, I've been working with Univision Deportes, which is now in TUDN, I started in Miami, where our main office is. And of course, when you're working in Univision and TUDN, Liga MX is the main thing. Especially I moved with them to Mexico City in 2015. I spent 2 years there covering Liga MX. So
Kelly was a great tour guide for all of us in Mexico City before the qualifier at Azteca. So that was a nice little note. But anyway,
Thank you. Continue, please. I appreciate it. I had a lot of pressure on that trip.
You did.
I cannot fail my guys. This is my this is my ex home ground. Yeah, and then I moved. They gave me the opportunity to move to the West Coast. I moved to Tijuana because at that point in 2017, El Piojo, Miguel Herrera, was coaching Cholos.
Did he slap you ever when he was coaching the team and you were covering?
Thankfully, never. That's good. Never. But he's a great guy to cover. He's
not boring.
Not boring at all. And that gave me the opportunity to start covering also the West Coast on the US, LA. And that time it coincided with the LFC born.
Arrival.
As a franchise, arrival, and the announcement of Carlos Vela, and then Chicharito comes in. So LA for us, it became a big market. Mm-hmm. So after Gold Cup 2019, they gave me the opportunity to move back to the US and be stationed here between LA and San Diego and covering the West Coast. And from there, just started back on the USMNT bandwagon, if you can say that, and the beat, and Major League Soccer. And here we are. And now I'm the Major League Soccer sideline guide for TUDN, traveling every weekend, which my girlfriend absolutely loves. Not.
And hey, you got to be racking up the miles and the hotel points. You guys have a nice free vacation in your future, I feel like.
Yeah, I actually, you know what? This is coming out on Fridays, but we have not a doubleheader. We have two games this weekend on TUDN. We have on Saturday, LAFC San Jose. And Sunday, Galaxy Austin.
Yeah.
So we're staying the whole weekend in LA and we're making it a mini vacation.
Oh, there you go.
We got a nice upgrade.
You're about to be gone for 2 weeks.
Hotel points. Yeah. So you make it happen. It has its perks. So yes. That's how I keep the my lady happy.
There you go. That's important. Well, Michele really does pay very close attention, not just to the US, but to MLS as well. So for anybody that's a fan of this show, you would be a fan of his work. So go check him out on Twitter. And if you're so inclined, watch the 2DN broadcast for the games that they're doing. And you will hear Michele, you will hear our boy Danny Nora doing some play-by-play, maybe seeing some goals, claro que sí, and maybe you'll pick up a few words of Spanish along the way.
Do I need a catchphrase?
I don't know. Do you need one? You can't force a catchphrase. You can't force a catchphrase. If it's natural, sure. But, you know, don't push it just to have one. I think that's important. It's got to be authentic, as
good
they
advice.
Say. Michele, another awkward transition. The USMNT had a roster drop last week. June window coming up, roughly 3 week long camp. They're going to start coming together in Cincinnati on Friday, the day that this show is released. Players will begin trickling in and then continuing to trickle in over the weekend and into Monday ahead of a friendly against Morocco on June 1st at TQL Stadium. Moving to Kansas City after that for a friendly against Uruguay on June 5th, and then CONCACAF Nations League matches against Grenada on June 10th in Austin and at El Salvador on June 14th. These are four of the final six matches before Qatar. The remaining two will be in September during a 9-day camp. That's a lot shorter than a 3-week camp. So any big changes, any big tactical shifts, any extended looks that Greg Berhalter wants to take at new players and evaluate how they're going to integrate into the group, those are happening this window primarily. He said that the September roster is going to be kind of the unofficial roster for the World Cup. So if a guy wants to improve his place, the best chance to do it is right now. So this is a really important camp, even though the games themselves aren't going to be necessarily super high profile. So that's kind of setting the table. We got the roster last week, 27 guys on it. Most of you listening to the show will probably already be familiar with that. It was announced last Friday, so somewhat old news. A few surprises, a few new names, a few exclusions due to injuries that we were expecting. One that maybe we weren't in Chris Richards. I think a lot of people were hopeful that he was going to be able to make the squad, but let me just run it down here real quick. Three goalkeepers, Zach Steffen, Matt Turner, Ethan Horvath, five fullbacks, George Bello, Reggie Cannon, Anthony Robinson, Joe Scally, DeAndre Yedlin, four center backs, obviously a big position of need following the injury to Miles Robinson. Walker Zimmerman is there, of course, followed by Cameron Carter-Vickers, Aaron Long, and Eric Palmer-Brown, who all have a huge opportunity to kind of work their way up the depth chart. Defensive midfielders, as expected, Kellen Acosta and Tyler Adams. Central midfielders, we have six of them. Luca De La Torre, Weston McKennie, Yunus Musa, all as expected, Christian Roldan. Maybe not expected for some folks, but a guy who's been a part of every single roster since qualifying began. And then two new faces. Georgi Mihailovic, who's been outstanding for Montreal, a favorite of yours, I know, Michele, and Malik Tillman, a German-American dual national who is in the process of switching his allegiance, his registration from Germany to the U.S. He's a guy that has appeared for the German U21 national team quite a bit. Bayern Munich player could potentially be going out on loan this summer. Just 19 years old. He's capable of playing in a few different spots, kind of more of an attacking player. He's listed as an eight on this roster, but can also play out wide or as a center forward, which I'll get to in a second. Wingers, normal group. Brendan Aaronson, Paul Areola, Jordan Morris, Christian Pulisic, and Tim Weah. No Gio Reyna, who, of course, is out injured. Strikers, only two, which was somewhat surprising to me, with Jesus Ferreira and Haji Wright, another new face who tore it up in Turkey this season for Antalyaspor, particularly down the stretch, where he helped lift them under manager Nuri Sahin, by the way, Michele, I don't know if you knew that, kind of a fun fact, from the relegation zone in February all the way up to a final finish of seventh. So really impressive work for him. He scored a ton of goals. I think finished tied for sixth in the Turkish Super League with 14 on the season. So we'll break that down kind of in detail here as we go. But before we do that, Michele, overall takes on this roster. I think a lot of people were pretty happy with it for the most part. What were your thoughts?
No surprises. First of all, I got to give you kudos. You absolutely nailed the projection.
I did. I was 26 of 27. My only error was thinking Chris Richards was healthy enough to be on it.
Me too. No surprises. No reaction. My reaction is expected. I mean, I wasn't honestly surprised about anything. I was happy to see Georgi Mihajlović, and I'm pretty sure we're going to spend some time talking about what we can see and what most important, what we want to see out of him. And hopefully Berhalter could make us happy in the way he uses Georgi. I'm happy that some new faces like Tillman, like Haji Wright, deservedly so, are here. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that you mentioned that just two strikers. I've been, and you just mentioned my quote-unquote hot takes. I've been mentioned for a long time that I truly believe that in the, we don't know yet if it's going to be 23, 26 for the World Cup, the roster.
Berhalter is expecting 26.
Yes. If it's 23, even 26, I really believe that the roster is just going to have two strikers. And let me explain you why, because I think we have a surplus of really good wingers.
Yep.
I think we have three really good wingers, especially for what Berhalter wants to play on each side. And depending on the tactics that we hope Berhalter can experiment, and that's another point that I want to touch a little bit later, the disappointing of not having Gio Reyna on this squad.
Mm-hmm.
It's that I truly believe that the wingers can occupy different places and on Berhalter's tactics.
Reyna could be a guy that could play as a nine. Tim Weah could be a guy that could play as a nine.
He mentioned also, and I remember I spoke with Berhalter even during the lockdown in 2020, and he even mentioned Christian Pulisic.
Yeah, we've seen
it on Chelsea.
For Chelsea,
And I think... the surplus in quality of wingers and the capacity of them to play another position. Yeah.
Jordan Morris, too, by the way.
Yeah, also Jordan Morris. And I think that's why I believe that he's going to take just two number nines, two natural number nines, and he's going to utilize on for his advantage those wingers. I truly believe that all the wingers that are on this camp, and I truly believe that he has already chosen in his mind at least 80% of the squad that is going to be in Qatar. And like you said,
barring injuries, of course.
Yes, yeah. But let's say that everybody it's available.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that, like you mentioned, this is the last casting call for all the players that are not on his mind, on his list in Sharpie right now.
Yeah.
And because September, like you said, is going to be the unofficial World Cup roster, and I think that's just going to be a dress rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I'm very happy with the roster. I'm happy that guys like Christian Roldan are still in it. I'm happy that Georgi is hopefully given plenty of minutes to show what he can do. And I'm not surprised at all to see John Brooks. And I think we can spend
I'm glad you went there, because I was about to ask you about that. That was maybe the one position, I don't know if it was a surprise, but it was a headline that John Brooks was not called. He's coming off not his best season at Wolfsburg in Germany. He's going to be looking for a new club this summer. He's out of contract and they're not re-signing him. He was called in September. It was thought back at that time, which feels like a million years ago, that he was the number one center back in the pool, kind of one of the most important players, theoretically, for the USMNT. He struggled in that window. He didn't play very well against Canada. He played even worse at Honduras before he got yanked. Got called up in October, but pulled out because of injury and has not been back since. Has not been named to any of the rosters subsequently. Berhalter has been asked about this a million times. He's talked about form. He's talked about fit. He's talked about, he's not going to be able to come in and start for us. His answer has changed ever so slightly each time that he's given one. And this time he said, he talked about wanting to give him space to go focus on finding a new club. And that was part of the reason that he wasn't brought in. ESPN's Jeff Carlisle followed up And Berhalter basically said, in terms of John, him going to a new club doesn't preclude him from going to the from this roster. My point was, we're going to be able to see him now in a new environment, hopefully doing things that are similar to what we need him to do and that could help him make a case to be on the roster. That was simply it. We didn't think there'd be enough game time to get a guy like John Brooks on the field. So because of that, we did not bring him. I mean, I think it's pretty clear. Like, the answers have been tweaked. There have been different subtleties in terms of different versions that Berhalter has offered up over the last however many months. But he doesn't rate him at this point for whatever reason. And I don't know if there's something going on there that we don't know about, dating back to maybe that September camp. There's been a lot of, I don't want to call them conspiracy theories, but there's been a lot of theories about, you know, some eye rolls during the game in Nashville against Canada and body language and things like that. But for whatever reason, Berhalter has 4, 5, 6 center backs that he rates above John Brooks at this point in time. Could that change? I think so. Is Berhalter open to that? If you take him at his word, yes. Like he said repeatedly, the door is closed on no one, including John Brooks. I tend to believe him when he says things like that. But I think John Brooks is going to have to do a lot to walk through that door. I'll put it like that. So yeah, I don't think we're going to see him in Qatar, barring a pretty drastic change. What, I mean, I think we're in agreement there, right?
Yeah, I agree with you when you say you tend to believe him, and I do, except with John Brooks. When he, for example, PFOC came back for the last window, and he was given another opportunity. New players are coming to this window.
Yeah.
And are given opportunities. I don't believe it with John Brooks. Like you said, every month, every camp, there's been a slight difference on the response. You can say that a convenient response. On this camp, I was talking weeks ago, because I've been, since October, I've been very adamant about it. And I said very emphatically, John Brooks is not coming back under Greg Berhalter, at least on this.
These are the hot takes I'm talking about. They're not so hot. They're just emphatic. That's a good
emphatic
word.
Not emphatic. Emphatic. Because yes. I don't want to create problems, but I think it's, I just want to be emphatic. And I have some sources that have told me that something broke on the personal relation, on the environment subject, on what Berhalter wants in the locker room, inside that team. And I trust, and I've been trusting those sources, and I think the actions speak for themselves. And I do believe that it's going to be very hard. And we know that for a new player, or for a player to get a second chance or a new chance under Greg Berhalter from his entire tenure since 2019, is very difficult for a new player to break into camp. I don't know if you agree with that.
It depends on the position.
Right. Yeah.
But I think if you're a striker, as long as you're scoring a few goals.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. But my point is, like, in the case of John Brooks, we know that he has some options, at least on his mind. And we gotta remember that also coaches, even on the sporting side of things, they're very subjective. Maybe I see a player and you see the same player and we can have different opinions.
Yeah.
Like you could like a player, I could not like the same player, and we can have a debate about it. For example, Christian Roldan is a guy that is very polarizing. I really like him. I do believe that he deserves to be on the squad, even if it's a 23 roster for Qatar. I may be in the minority, but I'm seeing something that a lot of people don't see. So we see it on Mexico with Chicharito and Tata Martino. On the sporting side...
Well, there might be something more to that story.
Yeah, no. And there is, obviously. But that's what I mean with John Brooks. There's something else that it's not just related 100% to on-the-field performance. And I'm just... And that's the information that I've been trying to give publicly. I don't know all the details, but I know that something broke on that September camp.
But he recalled him in October, though.
Yeah, and that's the part that it's missing. It's like the missing link.
Yeah.
all the information that we've, and I know you've also heard some stuff, and that everything that broke and it's causing John Brooks not being on this team and on the team since September happened on that September window, but he gets called again in October. Right. That's the missing link on everything.
So what did it really break? I mean, like, that's the thing. The one interesting thing that we have as well is that, you know, he pulled out of that October camp due to injury. He played 16 minutes on September 11th, which was after the initial September window. He was on the bench for the following game on September 19th. And then apparently, you know, hurt his back, I believe, if that's correct. If I'm remembering correctly, maybe in training. He did not miss a game though. So he played again on September 25th, played 90, played 45 on October 2nd. Then the October window happens, takes 2 weeks off, and he plays 90 on October 16th in their first game back. So I'm kind of wondering, maybe there was something there. But regardless, he is not on this team. I would say it's pretty unlikely at this point that he's on the team going to the Middle East in November.
I agree.
There will be guys on the squad, obviously, that are on that plane to Qatar. On a lighter note, on a happier note, which player are you in this camp are you most excited to see with the USMNT? And it could be a new guy, it could be an old face. But who are you kind of most intrigued to watch in this coming window?
Oh, it has to be Georgi, right? It has to be Georgi Mihajlovic, because it
doesn't have to be.
Well, for me, it has to be.
All right, why? Why?
So we know that Berhalter sees Georgi and Christian Roldan as an eight.
Right.
Which is not really where they play for the clubs.
Yeah.
For the club, exactly. And that's the disconnection that some fans on some analysts like me.
But Georgi doesn't play. Georgi's position doesn't exist.
Exactly. You know, I was reading a few days ago a piece from Matt Doyle, and he compared, and I think he nailed it 100%. He compared Mihajlovic with Müller on Germany. And I remember when Müller made his debut with Bayern Munich, he was 16 or 17 years old, and through his career, I remember because the TV station that I work in Venezuela, we broadcast the Bundesliga, and because he was Bayern Munich, we'll broadcast them every weekend.
Sure.
It was the main game every week. And I've watched Müller since the beginning of his career. And for the love of God, I've never been able to, like, I'll ask people, can you explain which position does he play?
It's the Raumdeuter, right? Whatever that means in German.
I have no idea which position does he play. Is he a 10? Is he a winger? Is he a false nine? Is he an eight? But he's everywhere.
Yeah.
And he's crashing the box and he's scoring a thousand goals for Bayern for a German national team. And I think Georgi is on that island that we honestly don't know which is his best. We see it on Montreal, for example. He's everywhere. He starts sometimes at the wing, he cuts in, then he's crashing the box, like the goal that he scored last week. But the thing is that sadly, and that's why I'm very excited to see him and very excited about what Berhalter mentioned about maybe trying some different tactics, what we can see and where can Georgi fit, because I don't think he's an ideal eight on Berhalter's system.
Yeah, not in the 4-3-3.
And that's the same thing that happens with Christian Roldan. When he plays an eight on the 4-3-3, it doesn't work for him and the team. So, and transitioning to that, that's the part that I'm bummed about, not having Gio Reyna on this squad, because one of the things that I've been proponing since, and we've talked about it, I remember we were talking about driving like, 5 a.m. to the airport in Canada one day, about after the Canada game, what would you do? And I've always been...
Yeah, you and I are on the same page here.
About inverting the triangle in the midfield.
Doing a 4-2-3-1. Yeah.
Exactly. And playing with a true 10 or someone that's just a highly
But Gio Reyna is really the only guy that can do that.
Exactly. So I'm interested to see if maybe Georgie or even, whoa.
Lyle misses Gio Reyna too.
Yeah. Hi, Lyle. Maybe Georgie can be that.
I don't think there's a chance really of that. I think if we see Georgie in this window, I think it'll be in that three-man back line that not in it, but in the formation. Man, Lyle's on one today. Sorry.
He doesn't agree with my hot take.
So Berhalter has mentioned that he's going to experiment with a three-man back line in this window at some point. And if we see that, I think we could see Mihailovic in kind of one of those, that line of two, potentially in a 3-4-2-1, which is where he plays for Montreal. So he can sort of pop out wide. He can pop into the middle. But the main thing that he's going to be focused on is making not late arriving runs necessarily, but sort of delayed runs into the box where he can finish. That's what he's done really well in MLS, not just this season, but the past two seasons, I would say. And really since he arrived in Montreal from Chicago, when he's turned a corner as a player, he's got 7 goals and 4 assists in 13 games in the league this year. I think one of the main candidates for MVP so far, certainly for best 11. So curious to see what his role looks like. But for me, I think if he ends up on the plane to Qatar, it's not going to be as a starter, right? I think that 4-3-3 is what we're going to see. And I think we have a good idea of what that's going to look like in terms of personnel. It's that MMA midfield, right? Adams at the base, McKennie and Musa in front of him. So for me, I'm most excited to see one of the new guys, and that's Haji Wright. We talked about him a little bit already, but tore it up down the stretch in Turkey. Scored in 7 consecutive games until their finale. I believe he had 9 goals in his final 10. I actually went back and I watched all of his goals from this season, and he scored in a variety of different ways. He's a prototypical kind of striker, 6'3". He's big, not overwhelmingly quick, which is pretty typical for somebody of his size. But if he gets into the open field, he does have decent speed, enough to threaten, right? Enough to be a credible threat to run in behind, which is important. Not a ton in terms of what he's doing in possession. They didn't ask him to do a ton of that in Turkey. He wasn't super involved in those ways, but adept enough as a hold up player, as a guy that can receive the ball back to goal, hold off a defender and find a teammate quickly. But the finishing is what really stood out. He scored, like I said, in a variety of different ways. Some goals, there was one that some of you have probably seen where he nobody stepped to him and he just laced one from about 25 yards with his left foot, which is his weaker foot, into the upper 90. That was kind of an incredible goal. But the more typical ones are, he's positioning himself well to clean things up in the box, taking advantage and being opportunistic. He's receiving the ball maybe on the half turn, in between the center backs, taking one touch and ripping a shot far post and finding the back of the net. But there are times where you can see him use his speed and they play him through and he gets behind. And that's really positive. He's a pretty solid dribbler. There was one goal, and I have a story coming out on The Athletic, should be out by the time you listen to this. There's one goal where he was playing in a 2-forward setup, I think, in this game. He runs into the left channel, just kind of a speculative ball into the corner. He kind of drops his shoulder, does this little feint, and the defender totally bites. And he completely dekes him out, and he's able to turn the corner, run to goal. He's looking for a pass, but no option really presents itself. So he just curls one around the keeper and inside the far post. Really nice goal. And then, solid movement in the box too. So I'm very curious to see what he looks like in the setup. He's a guy that big time prospect as a youth player. He was a youth national team teammate of Pulisic and Tyler Adams. Dortmund was actually scouting him when they came across Pulisic for the first time before they signed him, which is kind of an interesting story. A weird career path. He's been, I think, at like 6 or 7 different clubs, and he's only 24, played all over the world, started his pro career with the New York Cosmos of all teams with Raul back in the day, and your boy Gio Savarese. He keeps coming up on this show. So I'm really excited to see what he can do.
Yeah.
Not just because of his attributes, but because of the state of the number 9 with the US.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for those same reasons, really excited to see Jesus Ferreira, who has been awesome for FC Dallas And, you know, I think he did some good things with the U.S. in the two starts he had in qualifying against El Salvador and against Panama at home. But the one thing that was lacking was his finishing, right? He missed a couple of really good chances against El Salvador. He scored a tap in against Panama, but he missed the goal on a really good chance later in that game. He has not had any issues with finishing for FC Dallas. He leads MLS in goals so far this season. So I'm excited to see what those two can do. And I'm excited to see what Christian Pulisic looks like as well. You know, a guy that struggled a little bit in qualifying. And if the U.S. is going to make noise at the World Cup, he can't be struggling in Qatar. So interesting to see what he looks like.
Yeah, I'm super excited about also Haji Wright. And he can be, like you said, he's 24 years old. It's a good reminder, especially with the fan base and all the excitement that are around all the youngsters. We start touting 17, 18, 19 years old as the best thing in the world without them not showing anything that deserves it. And that not all growth is linear. And like you said, he got lost. And Berhalter even mentioned on the press conference that he wasn't on the radar because he was playing in several clubs, playing maybe as a winger.
Yeah.
And you know, the development takes time, takes being on the right place, sometimes at the right time, with the right system, with
opportunity the right is key.
Environment.
Coach believes in you, all that.
Exactly. And the most, to close my point, the most exciting thing about him is that maybe, and I haven't watched him a lot except the highlights, you know, the goals that he has scored. He's kind of a mix between Ferreira and what we want that Pepe could be one day. Because
I don't see much Ferreira there.
Because the Ferreira in the sense is that he can dribble, like you say, he can make that turn, and he can start his runs into his runs behind the line or even from midfield. I think he has that ball capacity that Ferreira has and the movement in spaces and the physical prototype, maybe the finishing that Pepe has, and we know he has. Mm-hmm. And he's going to, again, Pepe's just 19 years old, and there's something that we're going to touch on here later about what he's not on this camp. But again, what's the main issue that Berhalter asks from his number 9? He has to be a defender too. He has to be able to play with his back.
That's not the main thing he asks. He asks them to score goals. That's the main thing.
You have to do the defensive work. Yes, yes and no. But let me rephrase that. Not the main thing. You're right. But it's an important thing that the number 9 has.
It's part of the equation.
Has to be. And that's why Jassy Sardes has been on the radar and playing for him for as much as he's done. And for the USMNT and Josie Altidore at his moment, they need, especially with the wingers that we have, number 9s that can play well with the backs to goal, that can hold up play, that can move between the lines, and that can defend. Can Haji Wright do those things? That's what
I think. From what I watched, which admittedly I'm watching clips, but it wasn't just goal clips that I was watching. From what I saw of him, I think he's capable of that. He seemed like a decently hard worker in defense.
Do you think that in Berhalter's system, and we've seen it, the number 9 has to be that much of a goal scorer? Because I don't.
Well, I think that's an interesting question. And I think that's a good way for us to come back from this break that we're about to take. We'll start there and kind of outline that answer, as well as a few other priorities that we think Greg Berhalter needs to be looking at in this window. Stay with us.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick and mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth. And with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day to day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Welcome back to Allocation Disorder. Long first segment for you guys. That was a whole show we did, Michele, in one segment. Don't apologize. We're just giving the people content.
This is too much pressure. I'm on Allocation Disorder, man.
Why are you apologizing? I'm the one running the show here. I'm the host. So Michele ended the last segment by asking me a question. Is it that important for the U.S. number nine to score in this system? Yeah, it is. That's my answer. Can they survive without that much production from the number nine? Yeah, of course. They only got 4 goals from the position in 14 games in qualifying, and they still did okay. But this is a team that was not overwhelming from an attacking perspective during the octagonal. And part of that was because they didn't have somebody that could really play up there, apart from 2 games of Ricardo Pepi in September in Honduras, in October against Jamaica. He has not scored in 25 games for club and country since that game against Jamaica in Austin back in October, by the way, getting that break for this window, which well-deserved, I guess. He's been very busy, a lot of life changes over the last year and a half, but he doesn't deserve a call up based on his form at this point in time. So well deserved, I guess, in more ways than one. But yeah, I think it's obviously important. You know, the ceiling for this team is I think massively constrained by the fact that the number nine hasn't produced at all. And not just like hasn't really produced, but hasn't really even been that involved in a lot of good attacking movements. And we saw some flashes of that from Pepi, I think, in the last window. You know, he didn't score, but I thought he did pretty well for the most part in the other aspects of his play. But mostly the position's been really lacking in every way, not just in front of a goal, but in every way for the U.S. I'm excited to see Ferreira in right, like I mentioned. I think Ferreira adds a different element to this team where he can really drop into midfield and combine. We've seen him do that well for Dallas. It helps with those wingers. You know, if he can drop into midfield, the center back has to make a choice. Do I run with him and open up space for those 2 wingers to run in behind? Or do I try and pass him off to a defensive midfielder who may or may not be able to pick him up? If they can't pick him up, then Ferreira has space and time. When he receives the ball, he can turn and he can create some danger on his own. He has that ability. So I think that is intriguing for the U.S. And if he can finish like he has for FC Dallas, I think he's in pole position to start in Qatar at this point. A lot could change between now and November. But, you know, to go back to your question, this is going to be a tough group for the U.S. They're going to be underdogs against England. If England plays to their potential, England will win that game, in my opinion. And then it's going to be a dogfight with Iran and whoever advances from that UEFA playoff, whether it be Scotland, Ukraine, or Wales, for who's going to finish second, in my opinion. those three teams are going to have a real battle on their hands. And if you have a forward that can't score, that's going to really hurt you, right? Naturally. So yes, I think it matters a lot. If you look at the way Berhalter's teams played in Columbus, which is different than how they play with the US, the striker was really important, scored a ton of goals, whether it was Kai Kamara, Ola Kamara, or Giassi Zardes. You know, loved getting the ball down the flanks and that into the primary assist zones and cutting back and picking out the striker. That's kind of what they lived on there. US, again, doesn't play the same sort of way, but you need that person to be efficient in that spot. So I think, to me, that's one of the biggest, I guess, priorities or question marks, however you want to phrase it, for Berhalter heading into this window, that he should want to get sorted out. Will he get it sorted out? It's not really up to him. and probably not. You know, I would expect that this is going to be a race that stays wide open through November. And whoever is in the best form at that point in time is going to be the person that's on the plane. But I do like the fact that he has two very different options in Ferreira and Wright in terms of how they play, and that will be able to kind of allow them to experiment with maybe some different looks on this team. So we've talked about striker a lot. I do want to move on to some other positions on the field, Michele, or maybe not even positions, but just kind of topics or themes. If you are Greg Berhalter, what are your main priorities besides striker heading into this game?
I think left back. It's
the backup left back.
The backup left back. I think, yeah. Jerai Robinson, it's a lock-in starter right now. One of mm-hmm. the few that you could say he has the plane ticket to Qatar sealed, but yeah. And he's a starter mm-hmm. for all the games. Mm-hmm. And he played... I think in minutes, the most guy that played during the World Cup qualifiers, or he was very close.
I think he was behind Adams, but
yeah. Adams and him, but by a wide margin. I think left back. I think the goalkeeper situation.
Well, let's stay with left back for a second.
Okay, let's. Yeah.
So George Bello is the backup there right now. He was the guy that was called into this window. But Berhalter name checked a few other guys: Sam Vines, who was called mm-hmm. up for one window in qualifying. John Tolkien, New York Red Bulls homegrown, who's done pretty well in MLS. And Kevin Paredes, I believe, was the other one whose name was dropped. Former DC United, went over to Wolfsburg in January. I think only played 13 minutes or so. So didn't really get a ton of time. But Berhalter said it himself. The backup job there is completely wide open, to the point where he didn't even call in backup left backs to some of the camps. It was like, yeah, Serginho Dest can play over there if we need him, or Kellen Acosta, or whoever.
I know Kevin Paredes is highly rated inside mm-hmm. the Berhalter's mind and his coaching staff. He was the star of December camp.
Yeah.
He got injured like a week before the game, and I was told that he was the best player on camp while he was there. Mm-hmm. He was going to be starter on that game, and he was going to be the option, the opportunity to be on the January camp and be part of that World Qualifiers roster on January. So it's a shame that first he got injured. He couldn't play on December and be on the January roster and have that experience of being part of a mm-hmm. Qualifiers window. And then he goes to Wolfsburg and he doesn't play.
Yeah.
You mentioned 13 minutes, and that has slowly played against him and the chances to be on this window.
It's hard to get into excited. The team. Yeah.
I had him on my projection to a World Cup at the beginning of the year. I had him on my projection of this roster. I said, well, this is going to be an opportunity to Berhalter to give him minutes, the minutes that maybe he could have or didn't get with Wolfsburg, and to see him again, since being that shiny object, if you can mention that with all due respect, of the December camp, you know? Mm-hmm. Sometimes my English fails me, so no, I apologize for that.
it didn't there.
and yeah, I think, but there's the other scenario that you mentioned, that we're going to see a repeat of what we saw in qualifiers. You have a lot of depth on the right back position mm-hmm. with Dest, Yedlin, and Cannon.
And Shaq Moore, who was not Shaq called Moore, to this camp. Yeah.
Even Brooks Lennon, that mm-hmm. also has had a really good start of the Major League Soccer season with Atlanta United, and that he brings two or three of those names and just brings Jedi after his only natural left back. When you see in the World Cup, in the group stage, it's not crazy to think that a Robinson can play all the minutes and have Serginho desk of that breaking glass.
Break in case of emergency.
Yes, break the glass in case of emergency. And that's a situation
I don't love that.
And I think it's the biggest one right now, because I don't think that Scali can make the impact that he needs to make on these camps. I know when he had the opportunity to be in his only camp, he didn't perform well. He didn't left the greatest impression. And honestly, is that his position? His ideal position as a left back? We know he can
play. He played on the right mostly for Mönchengladbach. Yes. Yeah.
So that's where you're basically doing another Serginho desk.
Yeah.
Just switching a right back to a left back position. So
you are Team Scali hard in the last window, though, if I'm remembering correctly.
Team Scali?
Yeah. Didn't you want him called up when
Serginho desk got injured that day that the call up was coming up, and I mentioned, hey guys, don't, because the fans
but then Cannon got COVID and Yedlin got suspended and it's gonna be
Shaq Moore, because we know Greg wanted the experience. It was the last window. He was not gonna call up a player that didn't have that experience and those minutes. I don't think Scali it's gonna have the time to have the minutes that he deserves to try to fight. Maybe he does, but I think the options that we just laid out
is a lot of time.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I just don't see it. I don't think Berhalter rates him that high, honestly. But yes, I am surprised that he's here over Paredes. But you can make.
I thought you said no surprises. What happened to that? I think Berhalter does rate Scali. This was his first real season playing professional matches.
Yeah.
And so there are naturally some ups and downs there. Will he make the World Cup squad? Maybe. Maybe not. But I think regardless of that, he's certainly one that's going to be involved quite a bit with this program in the future.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. So, Tolkien. I was asked about Keaton Parks. I think Keaton Parks is going to be.
I'm surprised that he wasn't mentioned as a snub by Berhalter.
I was told he wasn't even considered.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. Maybe it's the athletic profile. Maybe they don't think he presses. But yeah,
what fans has to understand is that this is not the end of everything.
No,
like Qatar is not the end. Like all these youngsters,
2026 is a pretty big deal.
Exactly, I will say it's a bigger deal. So all these youngsters are going to have the opportunity starting from January camp in 2023 to just even with a new head coach. Who knows? You're right. Yeah. And to start making their cases. So don't burn down U.S. soccer because Joe Scali doesn't make the World Cup roster in Qatar.
Well, maybe he will. So also don't burn him down until we know one way or another. A couple other positions that I'm keeping an eye on, definitely center back. We have guys, three guys that we haven't seen a ton of since qualifying began in Cameron Carter-Vickers, in Eric Palmer-Brown, and in Aaron Long. Long we've seen a lot of with Berhalter, but he missed most of qualifying while recovering from the Achilles rupture that he suffered right about a year ago. As a matter of fact, we saw him come in the last window. Same with Palmer-Brown. That was his only call up. Carter-Vickers was not called up at all in qualifying. This is his first appearance with the national team since 2019. So his first time back coming off a successful season with Celtic. Palmer Brown coming off a successful season with Troyes in France. Aaron Long, we know, with the Red Bulls. And then, of course, Walker Zimmerman, who is penciled in as the starter. Sad, disappointing that Chris Richards was not healthy enough to participate in this one. I would have liked to see him and Zimmerman play together. I think I wouldn't be surprised if we see Richards make a move, a permanent move this summer. And he showed some good things, really young center back. And I think a guy who, if he can get healthy and he's close already, I think we could see him start in the World Cup. I think some real questions there. Interested to see what the answers are. Berhalter spoke about Carter-Vickers and Palmer Brown, kind of more specifically in his press conference. He said he thinks that both have good comfort on the ball. Both are good 1v1 defenders. Both have good speed, can cover space behind them. So we're excited to see them in camp. Palmer Brown played in a three-man back line primarily for his club. Carter Vickers playing for Celtic, a team that really dominates in Scotland most weeks. So, you know, kind of left on an island playing a pretty high line a lot of times. Not a ton of defending to do always, but somebody that when called into question has a lot on a lot to handle. So curious to see what those guys look like. And I think it's pretty wide open right now for who's going to win that battle. James Sands, another one that Berhalter mentioned as a candidate for this position, but one that he's giving some time off to recover, just like Pepe and Gianluca Busio, guys that have been going nonstop basically since January 2021 from MLS and then making moves to Europe. So I don't really know how that's going to shake out, Michele, that position.
Yeah,
definitely one I'm going to keep an eye on.
Yeah, alongside with Gio Reyna, not having Richards, it was the biggest letdown, because right now it's, like you mentioned, it's Walker Zimmerman is penciled right now as center back number one, and all the conversation is who's going to be his partner, when we thought maybe potentially it could be Miles, who was maybe the center back that played the most on qualifiers and was potentially the best player of the USMNT on the last Gold Cup, scoring the goal on the final. And I was super excited to see Richards because he's been highly touted as this great prospect and now reality with Hoffenheim and under the Bayern Munich and FC Dallas Academy. Mm-hmm. And potentially we, on the ideal scenario, would have had Richards right now when we start seeing in this roster projection and this roster development 2 years ago or 3 years ago as getting to Qatar with Chris Richards as your center back number one, right? And now it's, we don't have it. And especially because Berhalter mentioned, like you said earlier, that there's a possibility of trying with three center backs, a line of three center backs on the back, like we saw on the Nation League's final and we saw during the last Gold Cup. And not having Richards there, getting those minutes, getting those reps, because we cannot stress this enough. After these four games, which he's not going to be part of,
they have 10 days essentially before they convene for the World Cup, which they'll have about a week
The last two games in September, and that's it. And you can ask any center back in the world, even amateur, it's timing, chemistry, mm-hmm. and
all of that stuff takes time.
Exactly.
It doesn't get born out of nothing.
And that's why I think, and fans are not going to like it, Aaron Long has a really good chance to be the guy alongside Walker Zimmerman.
I think you're right. Aaron Long, by the way, a guy I think underrated athletically.
I will agree with that. Yeah.
He can move. He's fast. So he replaces some of that goes out the window with Robinson being out. He wasn't great in the March window when he played. But he's been solid in MLS so far this season. And we'll see. But definitely a position that's a major, major question mark for the US heading into Qatar. You know, the thought of that group kind of defending against Harry Kane and coming up against Phil Foden or Jadon Sancho or Marcus Rashford, not super pleasant prospect. but you know, we'll see how it goes. Lots of time between now and then. Michele, let's take one more break. We'll tie up this USMNT talk. Maybe do a little rapid fire. I'll throw some questions at you real quick, and we can do a little lightning round. And then I want to continue that theme, that lightning round. Get some opinions on MLS from you. Stay with us.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to Allocation Disorder. I am Sam Stasekel, joined by my guy, Michele Giannone. Michele, I'm going to throw some crap at you, and you're going to have to respond real quick, okay? You ready for this?
I just want to say this has not been prepared. I have no idea what Sam is going to ask me.
Yep. How concerned are you, scale of 1 to 10, about the USMNT's goalkeeping situation?
10.
10?
Yes.
Max concerned. Why?
Max concerned. Because potentially all three goalkeepers are going to be second options on their clubs.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Matt Turner is moving to Arsenal. You know, theoretically, it's an open competition there. But Aaron Ramsdale, they purchased for roughly $40 million less than a year ago, and he had a good season. So it's going to be an uphill battle for him to get regular games in the EPL. Zach Steffen, we know the situation there. Unless he leaves Manchester City, whether via transfer or loan, he will be the backup to Ederson. He had a shaky end to the year for club and country. He was not particularly good in the March window. And, you know, most of you will know what happened in the FA Cup final with the big error that he had there. Or excuse me, not the final, semifinal, right? I can't even remember.
Semifinal.
Too many games.
FA Cup, semifinal, yeah.
So, yeah, he's not really coming into this camp in the finest form. And then Ethan Horvath back up at Nottingham Forest. They have a big game this weekend, promotion final for the championship to try and get into the Premier League. Brice Samba, their starter. Their hero at this moment in time with the performance and the shootout and the semis. So it's going to be tough sledding and like unless he moves or unless Samba moves for Horvath.
It's crazy to think, Sam, that we can say on paper that the three goalkeepers are playing in Europe. Uh-huh. Two of the clubs are Manchester City and Arsenal.
Yeah.
And it's the position that worries me the most.
Might be three Premier League goalkeepers.
Yeah.
Depending on how the final
goes. It's crazy to think.
It is pretty wild. I spoke to Turner actually this week. And I asked him about the move. And he was like, essentially, this isn't a verbatim quote or anything. He's like, well, you know, I don't think it hurts my chances because I was playing every week in MLS and I wasn't really the starter. I was only starting when Zach wasn't available. And so if I'm going over there, I can work on my foot skills with Arsenal in a way that I can't with New England. At worst, it's status quo. And at best, I can leapfrog him. So that's sort of the thinking there. I'm not super comfortable with it either. I would say my concern is more of a six or seven, maybe six and a half than 10.
I went full Michele. Full
yeah, you Twitter did. Emphatic, Michele. Emphatic Michele. Another question for you. Four games this window. How much should Berhalter prioritize building chemistry with the A team that's going to be seeing the field in Qatar? And how much should he prioritize running out the fringe guys who are going to be making up spots 18 through 26 on the roster and testing them out and giving them run?
I will say 80-20 on prioritizing the first team.
So three out of four games, basically?
Especially against the first two, Morocco, and especially extra special Uruguay, which is a big time CONMEBOL team. And because I mentioned before, I think Greg has already in his mind 80% or even 90% of the roster already selected. Mm-hmm. And it has to happen something catastrophic for a player that he has in his mind to be left out. So I will want, especially on those first two games, and again, against Uruguay, which is the by far the strongest of the fourth rivals, we got to test that World Cup squad.
Yeah. Berhalter mentioned the three-man back line. We talked about that a little bit. It could be a way to sort of maintain a little bit more control, potentially, possess a little bit more of the ball, maybe a little bit different look defensively. You know, could be good options there. Cannon could play in the middle of that. But I want to ask you about something else in regards to a potential tactical change. I asked him this question in his press conference the other day about what we might see. He said, we will most likely look at another formation in one of the games, three-man backline, as we've discussed. Then we'll continue to emphasize some of our strengths. I think our defensive pressure was excellent throughout qualifying. Our offensive transition can improve a little bit when we win the ball, make sure we're getting chances out of that. Still focusing on verticality, our favorite word on allocation disorder, moving behind the back line. Then, you know, I think there's going to be moments where we can control the game better. I think in qualifying, we didn't necessarily do that really well. Those last two sentences about control stood out to me. Everything else was pretty standard. But when I think about control, I think about the midfield. And yes, they're not great at possession. They're excellent in transition. They're excellent defensively, but they're not great at being able to kind of knock it around and control, right? As Berhalter said. When you hear those last two sentences, do you anticipate any sort of tactical tweak, whether subtle, maybe, you know, dropping Yunus Musa a little bit deeper to help out with Tyler Adams in the build out, or maybe a little bit more explicit, maybe shifting to a 4-2-3-1 or changing the shape, or nothing at all? Do you think it'll just be the same?
It depends, and depends what he wants to play, honestly. And it sounds cliche, but how do you want to play on the World Cup? Do you want to play in transition? Do you want to be the aggressor? What do you want to do against England, for example?
Yeah.
Do you want to try to control the ball and have possession, or just want to sit down and play in transition?
Well, I think you want to be able to control the ball and have possession when you can, understanding exactly that England's probably going to dominate
and
the
that's,
ball in that
And
match.
That's what I was proponent, or I'm still proponent, or seeing something different in the midfield. Again, flipping the triangle and having that double pivot with, you can say, Yunus or Tyler, or maybe that gives also Weston a little bit more freedom and to get in between the lines. But again, and also it's the word that you mentioned that I also love, verticality. do you wanna bring out your opponent so you can use your wings and trying to get back behind them? Because if you wanna play against a team that is sitting on a low block, it's very difficult to do that. So you gotta be the aggressor. You gotta break the lines. How you're gonna break the lines? You have to have more ball possession and more ball. And again, this is tied to the way that I don't see Georgie working on this 4-3-3, and that's why I'm imploring a change. At least
imploring. Set up the team around Georgi Mihailovic.
Yes. Georgi and Christian Roldan. I want to see a change, at least try a change, because Georgi is not a ball progression number eight, a ball progression midfielder. And that's what you're going to need in some cases, right? And that's why I want to see a different switch, something different on the midfield, like we've been talking about for a long time.
All right, fair enough. Last thing for you here, Michele.
What do you think about it?
What do I think? I don't know. I would like to see Musa a little bit more involved in build up. I think it's pretty clear at this point that Adams can't handle that portion of the game by himself. I think he needs a little bit help in that area. Yeah. And I think there are going to be moments in Qatar when you just need to take the sting out of it and keep the ball a little bit and give yourself a breather, you know? And I think doing that, you could achieve that a little bit through Musa. I think that could have some implications for where McKennie is stationed, where Pulisic is stationed, where Anthony Robinson is stationed. It could affect a lot of things, but I think a subtle shift, maybe just dropping him a little bit deeper, could, I think, change things somewhat significantly for the entire team. So I'm that's one thing I'm going to be keeping a close eye on here heading into this window and during this window. So that's where I'm at. One last thing for you. MLS question. We're roughly 40% of the way through the season. You watch more MLS games, I think, than anybody that isn't named Matt Doyle or Joe Lowry. So you know, I'm just going to throw this at you kind of broad, but I'm going to throw it at you. What do you think? What? Say what you need to say.
No, you know, because normally on TUDN, our broadcast, are Saturdays afternoon, right?
Yeah.
So I fly to a city every Friday, do the game. It's sometimes I have time to go straight back from the stadium to airport and be back home Saturday night.
Yeah. But other times you're stuck in market on Saturday by yourself because the rest of the crew is calling off a monitor.
No,
yeah.
but the thing is that when I come back home, then I'm watching MLS like on my couch on Sunday because like my off day coming back from
your girlfriend must really like you, by the way.
Yes. And it's like, I don't know. Sometimes it's like, I feel dirty. I feel bad that I'm watching this MLS Sunday after dark. And my girlfriend just, it says, soccer again?
Yeah, been there.
Babe, it's I'm sorry, it's work. It's my job. It's my job. No, but I watch too much, honestly. And I feel
Never enough. Never enough. Somebody's got to boost those ratings. So thank you for doing that.
Thanks for your sacrifice.
But what to you is the most interesting or important or standout story of the season thus far across MLS?
I think it's LAFC.
Okay.
I think the Carlos Vela LAFC situation is still very fascinating. It's I think LAFC alongside with New York City FC are right now a step ahead of the whole league.
Uh-huh.
And it's mainly because the depth that both teams have. Mm-hmm. So right now I have New York City FC, LAFC, then a little gap, Philly, another little gap, and then you have your Austins, RSL.
No Seattle in that mix.
Seattle is coming, but they're still and they're gonna be in the playoffs. Come on, it's a long season.
Sure, okay,
we even have hit the summer, but I think the LFC, what they done bringing Chirondolo, with that everybody was talking about Jurgen Klinsmann, Juan Carlos Osorio.
And were people talking about that?
Honestly, there were names here in the LA market.
Seriously, Osorio, they spoke
here on the LA market. Klinsmann was mentioned a little bit. Not seriously like Osorio, like you mentioned, but he was a name that was dropped. And what they did, especially what John Torrington did of retooling this squad, going to the MLS experience wealth with Maxime Crepeau, with Kellyn Acosta, with Ilya Sanchez, which I believe is right now the best six in the league.
Junto Ryan Brujo, Hollingshead.
My Brujo. Ryan Hollingshead, yeah. Daniel Henry.
Yeah.
All these players that know the league and we know that they work on Major League Soccer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, LAFC right now are not Vela dependent. And it's something that they can be proud of. And it's something that Chirondolo has made work. And I've been on the LAFC camp a lot. We've been broadcasting a lot of their games lately. And I've had the opportunity to speak with a lot of the players, with Ilya, even with Carlos, with Vela, Kellyn Acosta, etc. And they love the guy and they love Chirondolo. And I was told, and going back to Vela, that Carlos, one of the main reasons that he wanted out this year with LAFC, or making 2022 the last year of his experience on MLS and with LAFC, is that he had it with Bob Bradley. And he had it that the team didn't make the playoffs and the atmosphere wasn't great. And that's something that Steve Chirondolo worked on it. And it's not a coincidence that Vela's contract was just for 6 months, because he wanted with his family to see who was coming in and how the
That was the initial contract, though. They signed him for what was it? A 4.5 year deal.
Right.
The thought was going to be that the World Cup would be in the summer. He would still be playing for Mexico, and then they could make a decision after the World Cup.
Right, but there was a clause that could have, before the season started, to extend that and make it the full year, at least. And he declined that before knowing who was going to be the coach, mm-hmm. and how the atmosphere and how the team was going to be this year. And now I spoke to him, and I spoke with people again around his camp and in his camp, and he's very happy right now.
Yeah, he has reportedly agreed to a new deal. Yes,
which is supposedly very close to be announced. I mean, June 30th, it's when the contract expires, so they have to announce it really quick. And I think LAFC, it's right now, it's what every team on MLS, of course, alongside with Seattle, that you can look in the mirror and other teams can look LAFC as a franchise and what we've done. And they showing clearly what works in this league and how to make a winning project possible after not making the playoffs last year. Yeah. You know?
Which was kind of fluky even last year.
Yeah, but they still didn't make it, you know? So, and I can tell you that that's right now my favorite team to watch. And I'm trying to, even if we don't broadcast the game, trying to pay attention a lot. And actually, I'm going right now. Remember, we're recording this on Wednesday. After this, I'm driving to LA to watch the US Open Cup game against
the Galaxy. I meant to ask you before the show. Are you just going for fun?
Yeah, I'm going for fun. Just going to watch the game.
Yeah.
And it's going to be great.
Yeah,
and
no, that will be a good time.
So it's a win or win situation. Which
win or go home adds
to the trafico drama.
Win or go home. I don't know if we won this podcast, but we are going home. This is the end of the show. I'm Sam Staiskel. Michele, thank you so much for joining, man. This has been fun.
No, thank you. And for the opportunity, I'm very...
Don't thank me. This was all you, bro. You did me a nice little favor here by coming on. So I appreciate you.
You could have called 100 people, but you didn't. You called me. So I'm very thankful for that. I'm thankful to call you and Paul friends. And I'm thankful to be in Allocation Disorder.
All right. Well, we're thankful to have you. And I will see you in Cincinnati in a few days.
Damn it, USMNT.
Get ready for it. Thank you guys for listening. We will be back next week with some schedule of shows. We haven't exactly figured it out yet with the USMNT matches that are going on, but we will have some content for you in some way, shape, or form. Appreciate you as always. Thanks for listening. I'm Sam. He is Michele. This has been Allocation Disorder.